Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Miles to Go press telephone conference. During the opening presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded March 13, 2013. I would now like to turn the conference over to Gary Orfield, co-director of the Civil Rights Project, and Genevieve Siegel-Hawley, assistant professor at Virginia Commonwealth University and lead author of the report, Miles to Go, a report on school segregation in Virginia, 1989 to 2010. Please go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Gary Orfield, and I'm the co-director of the Civil Rights Project and a professor at UCLA. Civil Rights Project has been following issues of segregation, desegregation, resegregation ever since it was founded 16 years ago at Harvard University. We are the most active research center on civil rights issues in the United States, and we've commissioned over 450 reports and published more than 14 books on civil rights issues, including 5 on school segregation questions. Basically, what we're seeing in the country is a big historical trend of increasing desegregation or integration, and particularly in the South, that goes from the middle 1960s until the late 1980s, followed by resegregation. That's gone especially fast in the South, which was the most integrated part of the United States for a quarter century after the Civil Rights Revolution. Segregation matters because it's related to opportunity and to achievement and completion of school in many respects. Segregated schools have the most disadvantaged students and the least experienced and expert teachers, the most limited curriculum, the lowest graduation rate, so forth. And it's been largely ignored as a policy issue now for the last 30 years, where we've really emphasized high-stakes testing and charter schools as the big answers to our inequality. There was a major gain of closing the achievement gap, particularly between blacks and whites, that took place between the 1960s and the late 1980s. It was also a period of rapidly increasing high school completion. We've kind of lost that momentum since the resegregation set in the early 1990s. The schools have become more resegregated for both blacks and Latinos consistently year by year since the Supreme Court changed the rules in 1991 in the Oklahoma City case known as Dowell. This is the first of a series of 12 reports on the states from between Maine and North Carolina, where we're looking at the resegregation process and how it's varied by states and what can be done about it. Virginia is not the most severe pattern that we're looking at. Some of the northern states particularly are much more severe, but it's going in the wrong direction, and we think it requires serious attention from the educators and the political leaders of Virginia, not just in terms of the schools, but also in terms of the resegregation of housing as the country goes through a gigantic change in its racial population. Back in the time of the Civil Rights Revolution, American schools were about 1/8 non-white. They're now coming close to half non-white, with a particularly dramatic growth of Latino students who are now even more segregated than black students across the country. We see here patterns of serious segregation in the central cities of the Richmond and Tidewater areas, and major changes in school population, and some major opportunities in terms of growth of multiracial population in the state. We think Virginia is at a point when real leadership could make a major difference. Genevieve Siegel-Hawley, who is the author of this long and very detailed report, we'll lay out the basic findings of the report, and then we'll be open to your questions.
Great. Thank you, Gary. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be talking a little bit about some of the key figures from this report. It draws on federal data from the National Center for Education Statistics for the years 1989, 1999, and 2010. And we're looking at patterns of school segregation in the state of Virginia, in her three major metropolitan areas, and also within the largest school districts within those metros. So I'm going to walk you through some of these key figures for Virginia and then the three major metros, and just want to tell you that we'll be posting metropolitan summaries as separate documents along with that larger report to make it easier for the media and for readers to access specific information about their locales. So in terms of overall patterns in the state of Virginia, the share of white students declined sharply between 1989 and 2010, driven by a more than threefold increase in the share of Latino students. The Latino enrollment grew from about 2% in 1989 to 12% in 2010. In terms of black students, at roughly a quarter of the state's enrollment, black students continue to account for the largest minority group in the state. Fully 16% of black students in the state of Virginia enrolled in what we call intensely segregated minority schools. These are school settings where white students make up 10% or less of the enrollment. So 16% of black students enrolled in intensely segregated schools in 2010, a figure that rose from about 12% in 1989. Roughly 75% of the students attending intensely segregated schools are low income. And in terms of apartheid school settings, where white students account for 1% or less of the enrollment, low-income students make up 85% of the enrollment in apartheid schools. Those figures really highlight the ongoing overlap between intense racial isolation in schools and concentrations of poverty. And this is really one of the central reasons why separate still remains unequal. In terms of Latino students, the share of Virginia's Latino students enrolling in intensely segregated schools doubled from 3% to 6% between 1999 and 2010. At the same time, white students remain disproportionately isolated with other whites. For example, in the most recent year, the typical white student in the state went to a school that was roughly two-thirds white, even though whites accounted for just over half of Virginia's enrollment. And the last major trend in terms of the state is that students from different racial backgrounds experience very uneven levels of exposure to poverty. So the typical black student in Virginia went to a school in which low-income students accounted for about 50% of the student body. And for Latino students, that same figure was about 41%. But for whites, it was approximately 32%. Zeroing in on what's going on in the Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Newport News area in the Tidewater region, really the most notable finding was that the share of black students enrolling in intensely segregated minority settings doubled between 1989 and 2010, rising from about 9% to 18%. At the same time, the share of multiracial schools, these are schools where three or more racial groups make up at least 10% of the enrollment. The share of multiracial schools rose from just over 3% to more than 22% in the past 20 years. That's about a sevenfold increase. Out of the 11 major school districts that were open for all 3 years that we looked at in the Norfolk area, five were predominantly non-white by 2010, and three of those districts had transitioned from being racially diverse to being predominantly non-white in the past 20 years. The three school systems experiencing the most significant changes in the Norfolk area were Hampton, Newport News, and Suffolk. All three were characterized as resegregating non-white districts. Moving quickly over to the central part of the state in the Richmond-Petersburg metro, a couple of key things to note here. One, since 1989, white students in the Richmond-Petersburg metro made up about 10% or less of the enrollment in the area's urban schools. Meanwhile, the share of white students in the metro area's suburban settings fell from about 73% in 1989 to about 50% in 2010. Much of that increase in suburban diversity can be attributed to rising shares of black students enrolling in the region's suburban schools, up to a little over a third of the enrollment by 2010. At the same time, though, more than one in three black students in the Richmond area went to an intensely segregated minority school in 2010. That's roughly two times as many as in Norfolk and five times as many as in Northern Virginia. Nearly 14% of Richmond Petersburg's Latino students attended intensely segregated schools in 2010, more than triple the share attending such schools in 1989. And finally, we've got Northern Virginia. These are the suburbs of D.C., the Virginia suburbs of D.C. The public school enrollment in Northern Virginia was the most racially diverse of any region in the state. Latino students now make up the largest minority groups in Northern Virginia. It's the only region in the state reporting a pattern of more intense concentration of Latino students in segregated minority settings than for black students. Nearly 7% of Northern Virginia's Latino students attended an intensely segregated school. At the same time, the overall shares of students of all races attending multiracial schools in Northern Virginia was much higher than in other parts of the state. It was the only major region in the state to report that none of its largest school districts were predominantly white, at the same time that the share of predominantly non-white school systems quadrupled in the last 10 years, from about 11% to 44%. The report closes by saying that there are a number of possible policy options that really have no relationship to the mandatory plans of the early 1970s. Most involve very conscious efforts to use school choice and housing opportunity strategies in ways that can further school integration. I think, are ready to open it up for questions for those who have them.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And if you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4. And our first question comes from the line of Michael Martz, which with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you very much for holding this conference call. Very helpful. My first question is for Professor Orfield. I understand that you, with the Civil Rights Project, I'm familiar with some of your work, including the one, the report, Opportunities Suspended, about for the Center for Civil Rights Remedies, that specifically, it seems to me that there's a fairly strong linkage between that report and some of the findings in this report. Specifically, that report focused on Henrico County and among other school districts, and it seems to go to the issue of concentration of poverty and largely segregated schools. Is that, could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes. The Opportunity Suspended report and a series of reports we're doing around the country on school suspensions show a very disproportionate suspension of students of color, particularly African American male students. And we do show that there are areas of high concentration of these suspensions, and many of them are segregated by race and poverty. And although some of them are in suburban areas with white majorities where there's a very unequal treatment inside schools, we think that this suspension is a really dangerous threat to students' future, since students who are suspended are more likely to drop out and more likely to enter on a path that leads to involvement in the criminal justice system. We need to have better in-school options for students and not to resort to suspension.
Can I follow up on that with with Professor Siegel Hawley, in terms of one of the parts of the report that I don't fully understand is the evenness correlations, and that seems to get into issues, and I think this goes to this question of suspensions, like in Henrico County, where you have the disparities within school districts, not just between school districts, and that has a lot to do with also exposure of different students to various to other races and to other income levels. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. I thought that this was one of the most interesting things, interesting patterns in terms of the Richmond-Petersburg region. So back in 1989, the vast majority of school segregation in the metro area, about 72% of it, could be attributed to what was going on between school districts, so between Richmond City and the surrounding suburbs. But we've seen a really dramatic shift in that pattern in the past 20 years, so that today patterns of school segregation can be almost equally attributed to what's happening within districts as to what's happening between them. And that's related to the growing suburbanization of black students in the metropolitan area, and also to what's happening in terms of the concentration of white students in the Richmond City schools. But it suggests that there are patterns of segregation that are really solidifying within districts, that, policies occurring within the single jurisdiction could help ameliorate those patterns.
Mm-hmm. If I could just add a bit to that. Desegregation is a step towards integration. And you can have multiracial schools that are segregated inside the very school building by discipline patterns, by tracking, by misuse of special education, and so forth. So we need to not only have students in schools where they can learn together, but we have to treat them fairly inside those schools. And this is going to require more energy devoted to training teachers and administrators about and to monitoring these issues inside of schools. We haven't devoted enough time to that. It's not solved by just emphasizing score. We have a really complicated multiracial society, and it tends to replicate itself between schools and inside schools unless we pay attention.
Okay.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4. And our next question comes from the line of Hattie Garrow with the Virginian Pilot. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. And this question is for Genevieve. You had mentioned that Suffolk was one of three school districts in the Tidewater area that's characterized as a resegregating non-white district. I think I heard that right.
Yes.
And Suffolk is actually still under court-ordered desegregation. So I'm wondering if this resegregation, did you guys find that it's largely because of white students fleeing public schools?
Well, empirically the report isn't getting at the cause, and I didn't go into the definitions of how we were defining resegregation, even though that is in the report. I'm pulling up the Suffolk numbers right now. So, the cutoff, we defined a diverse district as between 20 and 60% non-white, and Suffolk for the first two time periods was right on that line, reporting about 41% white students in 1989 and 40% in 1999. And by 2010, that number had fallen to 35%, which put it into the predominantly non-white category. But those changes are not as significant as what we see in other districts in the area and also in other parts of the state.
More broadly, on the issue of desegregation of schools, there are a couple of factors that people need to pay attention to. There is really no evidence that there's an increasing share of students regionally or nationally in private schools. As a matter of fact, the percentage in private schools has been declining. There has been an increase in charter schools, of course, and I don't know what the picture is here. But the other thing is that many of the white children that you think might have fled actually weren't born. White birth rate has fallen quite dramatically. And, of course, the number of immigrant populations have grown very rapidly, particularly in areas of economic growth. So a lot of these changes are fundamentally demographic transformations of the entire society. But they don't tend to be abandonment of public schools, although there could be relocation among school districts.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4. And there are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the call back to Gary Orfield and Genevieve Siegel-Hawley.
Well, we'd like to thank you very much for participating in this call and to say that we will be happy to answer questions continuously, and that this report and the other reports will be posted at civilrightsproject.ucla.edu on the web, or just Google Civil Rights Project and you can get this and many other related reports we'll be producing.
Thank you, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the press conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.